Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And what is the date today? It's the second or third.
It's the second.
Second of July. So we got a July.
Yeah. And it's a short week. There's a lot. I mean, you know, we got the weird, you know, when these holidays fall on these weird dates where you have, just bear with me a second here. Yeah, that should be right. Just a second. I need to see something.
Did you push or hold down the play button when you pushed record?
Everything looks good. Although I'm coming in light. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I'll fix it. I'll fix it post. I'll figure it out. So, I mean, nothing's changed on my side, so it should be just fine. It's probably just the way I'm looking at this thing. Oh, yeah, it's all bunched up here. There we go. Well, that was a great opening for the show, don't you think?
What?
Just a lot of technical hoo-ha going on here. All right, a couple of things that are going on for the week before we get into the excitement about, we'll talk about this short week. We got the U.S. blinks at the G20. Trump walks on North Korean soil. Hoo-hoo!
Isn't this, not the North Korean part, but isn't this kind of what you predicted about the G20? That's what, the way I remember it.
Yeah, pretty much nothing's going to happen. I thought they'd come out with some kind of framework, some kind of...
Oh, that's right. You had this framework theory.
Yeah, we'll have a framework. And so the bottom line is, hey, thanks for the chat room for checking on the audio. It pretty much ended up in a nothing burger. We saw economic reports this week that were not encouraging by any means in the U.S., in China, in Europe. Nothing's looking good. In Japan. So things aren't really good there. We do have the tariff man striking again. That was kind of interesting what's happening there. We have new highs for the S&P 500. Nobody seems to care. And the
well, I'm sure people that are fully invested care.
Well, they care on the long side, right? The shorts are getting their tukas is handed to them.
Yeah, the shorts, this has not been a good market for shorts.
Yeah. And then let's see.
Which means it's probably going to be a great market for shorts.
Eventually, one day.
Yeah, but when? Years from now.
There'll be something that shows up kind of ugly. Let's see what we have. And we have a big issue regarding 5G. You see that article I sent you?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I saw that. Weird. It's they're using these frequencies they shouldn't be using.
Yeah, that was, and that was a Navy report that I sent you. One of our listeners sent that to us.
Yeah.
We have a new close.
Those frequencies are too high for.
Yeah, but you can't start messing with the weather. I mean, come on. I mean, not messing with the weather. Well, messing with the weather forecasts.
It's the weather. The signals interfere with the. With the satellite's analysis.
Yeah. We have a new close to the pin, which we're going to announce. Of course, that's right after we talk about donations, which, by the way, if you want to go and donate to the show, you can do so at any time. There's no particular time. There's no limitation. There's no date. July happens to be a really good month for donations, by the way. It's a lucky month for donations.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah. Here's a couple things. A little market update and factoid for you. July 1st, 2019, just yesterday, breaks the old record for the longest U.S. economic expansion in history. Before then, it was the range of March 1991 through March of 2001, which was 120 months.
Yeah.
So now here we are in July, and we're now at 121 months old for this economic expansion without a recession, you know, without any kind of recessionary signals in there.
Right. Although we had that crossover in March of the bond rates, treasuries.
Still there.
Which supposedly, yes, but when it happened in March, it's supposed to, at least according to some that I've read, it signals that we will have a recession in March of next year.
So 12 months out.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a short week for markets. It's going to be a a weird week. We have July 4th, the holiday showing up on a Thursday.
Show day for us.
Yeah, that's right. Never skip it on. No agenda. Thursdays and Sundays at 12 in the afternoon, Eastern time. So we have July 4th on a Thursday. And this is one of those weird holidays that the markets decide that they're going to close early on the day before. So markets close at 1 p.m. on Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yep. And on Friday, so now you have light volume on Wednesday. You have no volume on Thursday. On Friday, you have the jobs number. And there's probably going to be light volume there too, wouldn't you think?
Well, the way things seem to be is that people go on vacation when given this opportunity.
Yeah.
Especially if things close on, you know, Wednesday early. In New York, probably this means everything, including the book companies. I mean, the publishers always shutter at about noon on Fridays normally, but this time they'd shutter on possibly noon on Wednesdays, giving them half a day, then a day, then a day, then a day. And if you're, you know, looking for an extra few days, you might take off all of Wednesday and maybe Monday or Tuesday of the next week. Yes, it's going to be very thin on Friday.
Yeah, it's going to be thin on Friday. And what's interesting about that is you have the numbers this month, which are very crucial because last month we had such a miserable number compared to estimates. So now all of a sudden you're going to have all these people betting one way or the other. You got the people thinking, hey, you know what? This is a start of something. So they go into the number short thinking that if there's a, you know, kind of a very concerning number, there's going to be a market decline. And then you have those that are optimistic saying, hey, you know what? It was a one-off. It was an aberration. It was weather-related. It was a weird situation. And they're going into this on the long side, betting that things will go well. On the other hand, you have a really good number that would be problematic for the markets because they believe that the Fed will then hold off for a long period of time. A really bad number or a moderately bad number. People are thinking, hey, you know, there's going to be more potential for stimulus. And then you have, you know, all these different kind of cross currents going on. There's a lot of, it's not a normal day on top of the fact that you're going to have light volume, which means liquidity won't be there, which means that you could have some serious action on Friday, especially around the number at 8:30 in the morning.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, estimates are for, I think, about 100 and they range about 150 to 170,000 new jobs added, which is pretty much staying right there. The average estimate, the consensus is saying, you know, it was an aberration last month. So that's kind of where we are with all this.
So what happens to the market if they just hit that number, 175?
So they hit pretty much that sweet spot. I think that markets will probably be happy, but then at 170 would probably be a little bit more to the negative side because the thought would be that that's a pretty good number. There really isn't weakening. The Fed's not really going to be too excited about doing a substantial rate reduction in the face of this. The economy is still decent. So I think that would be questionable. I think if you get down to, let's say, back to where we were, 70,000, that would be a signal for the Fed to possibly be in play again. If you get like a really ugly number, let's say like zero.
That won't happen.
No, but 10,000, 15,000, or a negative number, I think that could be a problem. 250,000 is also a problem. That would signal that the Fed does not have to do anything right now.
Huh. Well, we'll find out on Friday.
We shall. We shall see. The G20 meeting. Okay. So here's what we got out of the G20 meeting. We got a lot of handshaking, a lot of weird Trump family stuff going on with meetings, I think there was a lot of videos taken out of context, to be honest with you. You saw a lot of those?
No, I didn't pay any attention.
You didn't see the Ivanka Trump with May and with Macron and with Lagarde? And they and the way it looked like she was nuzzling into this conversation, standing around in a circle, and they kind of turned their back on her a little bit. But I just think that was, I don't know, it was weird, but I think they took it out of context. And it made, you know.
That would be likely.
Yeah, well. And it was just weird, but it was also weird that, you know, they don't really, does Ivanka Trump have an official position? besides daughter?
Presidential advisor. It's an actual position.
It's official. It's like a real.
Yeah, I think she gets paid.
Oh. Well, here's what happened. So we saw that there was some little bit of a ruffling with Japan that they have to do better on something. The China meeting went through, and here's what came out of it. We're going to have a truce. That's the word they use, a truce, meaning I'm not sure what. But that means that there's going to be no further rate hikes on products. The 25% that was going to go on the additional $300 billion is postponed for right now. Trade talks have restarted. China is going to be buying an enormous amount of agricultural from the U.S., which seems to be a big a hotspot for Trump.
Yeah.
And Huawei is going to be able to purchase products from American companies in a very small manner, chips and a few other things.
Well, they need certain parts from us.
So it's a little weird, though. Do you think that that was odd, the Huawei situation, when it was supposed to be the whole reason for it was not related to trade, but it was related to security, national security? And all of a sudden, that's a bone that was thrown back to them?
There was something that went on behind the scenes that indicated that, you know, you can't break, you don't want to bankrupt Huawei because you can't find a part, you know, or they can't get something for their phones or whatever there's they're selling or something from their, for their routers. So they gave in on that just to, keep, you know, so they don't look like a bunch of jerks because they could probably cut us off. I mean, just like, you want any more iPhones?
Right.
Kind of thing. So they just gave in. I mean, the complaints about Huawei are still in play, and I don't think they're going to change. It's not so much security as a stolen stuff.
It seems to me, though, that the U.S. was much more – it looked like the U.S. was really trying to put this back on the table rather than holding off. It looks like we gave in more than they gave in this situation. It seems like we blinked.
Well, I think you could interpret that way, but if they're going to buy like a crap load of agricultural products, which Trump needs for his base, it may be okay.
But so what you're saying is it's all okay under the notion that it's politics as usual, that we are involved in the trade war, and by providing additional buys for agriculture, which is directly affecting his base. That's okay.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking that
why is it not okay to you?
It's not that it's not okay. It just seems to be so political rather than country-based. It's not for the good of the people. It's for good of Trump or good for the office or good for the politics.
Well, it's good for the market.
It is good for the market. As a matter of fact, the truce sent the markets higher. They were up as much as 1.5% approximately in both the pre-market and the opening. Came back a little bit when the reality hit, like, okay, what is really happening here? What's really happening is just a postponement. Nothing has changed. The same tariffs are still on. Nobody's, you know, we have maybe some talks going on, but nobody really gave a lot. There wasn't a lot that was given, but yet the markets moved higher.
Well, the side that I think we may have benefited because we get to sell more stuff to Huawei and we get to sell more agricultural products to China at large.
Yeah, I agree with you.
They don't get it. They're not sending anything over here that is like, you know, making them win.
I agree with you. It was definitely beneficial to us. And you have to wonder, is it just that China said, okay, we'll do a few things like this and then at least we don't get the tariffs and we can postpone this for a little longer. Their end game is definitely election, don't you think? Don't you think they're trying to be disruptive into the election?
China?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, China wants him out of there.
They probably do want him out of there.
Right. So they're going to probably try to postpone this, drag it on.
But then again, you know, Trump is one of the only presidents that I recollect. Except maybe there was some guys back in the day in the 1800s or something, but he's the only guy that's actually, he's a stock market president.
Who?
I mean, these other guys play lip service, but most of these other guys we've had as president, but Clinton and Obama, oh, right. And yep. Bush, They don't even know how to work the stock market.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because somebody from the chat room just said what's good for the market is good for America. I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. Obviously, there's more to it than that, but I agree with that.
You have a president that once said what's good for General Motors is good for the country. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Grover Cleveland or one of those guys, or Calvin Coolidge, one of the two. And he was a market-oriented guy. And in the 20s, I think we may have had a president like that. But within modern memory, we've never had a president that is out to keep the market propped up.
I agree. And you know what's interesting? I was watching the Democratic debate. And I was looking at all the different players up there, and I'm thinking, which one of these, if any, would be so market-oriented and would be have the markets in mind when they did things? Not that that's a criteria, but I was wondering who that would be. Because the concept is that, okay, if Trump doesn't get elected, markets, you know, possibly won't do well, and they may fall dramatically because there isn't somebody in there that is so focused on the markets.
Yeah.
There was not one person in that entire parade.
I agree. Except Andrew Yang may be a closeted version of that.
Maybe. But a small maybe.
Small maybe. The rest of they're all pushing the socialist line.
Yeah.
As far as they're concerned, the market should not exist. Stock market shouldn't even be. What's the purpose of this so-called stock market?
The so-called what they is known as the stock market. Now, let me ask you this. You watch the Democratic.
I watch it very carefully.
Which one of those do you think would be the worst? Or maybe the top two that would be the worst for the stock market?
Well, I think Kamala Harris would be one of them.
Really? Okay.
Well, because she has no experience in business and she doesn't know what the stock market is. And she's just a bureaucrat that's wormed her way into politics. And she does a very good job at keeping herself in a job. I think Elizabeth Warren looks like she should be on the list. But my experience with Elizabeth Warren and studying her is she's just a big mouth.
Oh, gigantic mouth with nothing that comes out of it.
She's just yaks about stuff but never does anything. She's a big talker, no doer. Mm-hmm. So she would I'm going to split up Facebook. I mean, I think the market would react immediately if she won anything just because of all her threats. But I don't think these threats are valid. I don't think she would be able to do anything. She would just be the same person bitching and moaning. All she does is complain.
Right.
Bernie should be on the list as number one, technically. Yeah. But you don't know.
I would think Bernie Sanders too.
You know, these guys are, these pure socialists. They get into power and the next thing you know, things don't change as much as you think, except their buddies get rich.
But I think Bernie Sanders would definitely attempt, whether it's successful or not, would attempt to do breakups of things and take down the banks and all that. And I think that Elizabeth Warren would also try to, or if nothing else, the perception of them desirous of doing that is going to be a problem. And I don't know who that wins over. Does it win over the talk about breaking up the banks and you know.
It wins over dissatisfied youths.
Right. That don't vote anyway.
Yes, this is a problem that they can't seem to figure out. No, they don't vote.
Right.
And so, that's who is, they're trying to get that vote. It might, I don't know who it appeals to be honest about it. Nobody really wants a sunken economy run by some maniac, that's trying to, make everybody's life miserable. It's just if times were different, I could see them having an appeal, but times are not different.
Nope.
No matter how much they say and talk about, the bad economy that Trump has, and a lot of them, I noticed this in the second debate, where all of them, they started off bitching and moaning about the economy. It's not as good as only good for the stock market, and we're not all in the stock market. The people can't put food on the table. They can't do this. They can't do that. And they moaned and groaned about not putting food on the table. And then at the end of the whole debate, they were asked, what's the one thing you really want to do? And all of them, with the exception of maybe one or two people, said, climate change. We got to fix. We got to stop climate change. Wait a minute. What about all these starving people you have? And now all you care about is climate change? I mean, make up your mind.
I think climate change is like one of those, it is one of those hot buttons that it's just appealing to. I'm going to, you know, it's a Miss Universe or Miss America pageant question. What would you do if you were Miss Universe or whatever, you know, Mr. Universe, Mr.
Yeah.
I would
stop climate change. Yeah,
well, world hunger, you know, it's the whole world hunger, of course. Well,
they don't ask those questions anymore, by the way.
No, they don't do a lot of things anymore. But if they did, it would be climate change, stop the, you know, cure diseases and world hunger. And of course, peace on earth of all that, you know, but that's you know,
it's not catching it. These guys are not doing well, but this is only the first debate. This will be better the second time around, I'm sure.
I would think so. And you know what? We haven't even mentioned Biden in any of this. It seems like he looked to me like a little bit of babbling and not on.
Yeah, he was a sleepy Joe, as Trump likes to call him, which is a moniker that might work. But I think I predicted this. I don't know if I did it on the show, but I talked to Curry about this. I'll probably talk about it on the show on Thursday. I might as well do it now. I believe that Biden was so kind of out of it that I think they're going to juice him for the next debate.
What? What are they going to juice him with? Coffee or
amphetamines, cocaine? I don't know. I don't know what they juice guys with anymore. But I would assume that he's going to be very lively the next debate. And you're going to go, Joe's all jacked up.
He's going to have his like eyes wide open. He's going to be like spitting when he talks. Violated. Oh, God. He'll be standing up there straight and sweating like a pig.
It'll be meth.
Oh, God. All right. I want to tell you a quick story about my Apple. So I had a MacBook Pro that was a late 2015 unit, but it was fast as can be. It was a great unit. i7. Plenty of RAM, beautiful machine. I used that for years for the podcast and all that. And I told you the battery started to expand to a point where it warped the chassis. So I bought it. I told you the story. I went to Apple. I went back to Apple. Finally, I got the box from Apple. I stuck it in the box. I sent it off to AppleCare. I get a note back the next day. Hey, we received it. I'm like, oh, that was quick. Okay, good. The next day after that, we're looking at this, and we found some other issues that we need to be told what to do with. I'm like, what kind of issues? They write me, there's moisture, possibly water damage. I'm thinking, what kind of water damage can be on my, it's been in my office. I mean, I take it sometimes home, but generally speaking, I use it like a desktop computer. It's in my office.
Yeah.
I have
Then you have a flood in your old office?
That was in the other office. There was no water getting on this thing.
Okay.
I mean, it's Florida. It's humid. So I don't know. Maybe that. But
well, Florida is humid, yeah.
I don't recall any even drop of water getting on this thing. So now...
Well, it wouldn't operate, it seems to me, if it was wet. Yeah.
So now they're saying, oh, there was water. So they want to charge me $749 now. I say, what?
The thing was bulging from an expanding battery.
Right, $749. I don't know if they're claiming that the battery bulge was due to the fact that there's water damage. I mean, I never hear water damage except for Apple. Do you ever hear a Microsoft or any Dell or a Asus ever hear you say, oh, you got water damage? Like, does that ever come up?
I've never heard of such a thing.
It's just Apple. Every time you do something, the first thing they ever do with a phone is they check it for water damage. It's like a fetish of theirs.
Huh.
And they take the little light or they look at a little indicator or whatever it is. So I said to him, you know what? Do me a favor. Send it back to me. I'm not doing that. Okay? Now, some people in the chat room have talked about, hey, you know what? They always say that. I have people that said that if you look it up online, Apple is like constantly saying that there's water damage as an excuse to like fix something. So I don't know if there's like a whole class action lawsuit going to happen here or something.
Well, that sounds like it if you can document this.
Yeah, well, I have to go out and I have to find a lot of people. And then you have to sue Apple, which is probably not a fun experience.
No, I'm sure it's horrible because they used to be the big lawsuit types. But this is another reason, as far as I'm concerned, I don't use the products. But
I mean, it's a great product. Honestly, you plug it in, it works.
Yeah, well, I don't dislike the functionality of their products on any of them. I think it's great. It's just the company I've always had problem. You know, I don't like their mean-spirited. They I got cut off from ever getting invited to anything or press releases. I wouldn't send them to me. All that sort of thing. It didn't bother me because I wasn't covering them anyway, but still.
And then
we have the second thing you should bitch about, which is that Rodecaster of yours doesn't work well with a Windows machine. It's kind of designed to work on an Apple.
Yeah, well, that I complained to Rode about. I'm going to complain more to that. I'm going to be a squeaky wheel on this.
You should be a squeaky wheel on everything.
Yeah, and the new thing should. I do, I've decided, I have a new way of doing things. I used to go to customer support. It used to be there was a place to click something, and you can either call somewhere, any company. You can call somewhere, or you could email them or something very easily, right? Now, customer support contact us is buried 20 pages deep. It's like the reincarnation of a phone tree on a website.
Yeah.
Right? So the new thing is, I'm like, I'm not dealing with this. So I go on Twitter and I just bitch on Twitter. And put their hashtag.
They're very concerned about people bitching on Twitter.
Yeah. So I bitch on Twitter. I recently bitched about my Ring doorbell that the battery was wearing out very quickly. They write me, well, the battery should. They write me right back. Oh, so sorry to hear your situation. So what they do is they say, hey, give us your email. You know, they follow you and they want you to DM them because they don't want it in public anymore, right? And then so now all of a sudden I do that. They write me back. They tell me it should last this long, whatever. I said, okay, great. They said, you know what? We're going to send you a new battery just to have an extra one. That's the way to do it. Folks, just go on Twitter and put in their hashtag or put in their, you know, Twitter user handle in the conversation. Ask a question like, has anybody else had this horrible problem with this device? I can't believe what's going on. Hey, blank. You know, what are we going to do about this?
I did the same thing with Comcast when my internet connection was flaky. Although it took longer than it should have. I think guys kept coming out, you know, and they finally somebody found the problem, which was a squirrel had bitten through one of the wires. Huh. And the guy brought the squirrel bitten thing, and they said, there, this was your problem. Now we know what it was. It was a squirrel that ate through the wire.
Oh.
And then the thing ran great ever since.
Well, squirrels can do damage if those big ass teeth.
Yeah.
And by the way, somebody's asking about this. This is a good question about, you know, if you have a check mark, it's even a better way to get things. Do I have a check mark on Twitter? You know what? First of all, I applied about 2 years ago and they're like, no, you can't have one. I'm like, okay. So recently, like maybe 3 weeks ago, I'm like, oh, you know what? Let me apply again. No longer doing the, what do they call that? The approved or the authenticated or the whatever Twitter does to put that check mark, that system is on hiatus for a while.
Why?
I don't know. Look it up. I looked it up. Huh. Twitter not doing, what do they call that? The
verification.
Yeah, verification. Look it up. Twitter verification.
They got some verified people on there. I don't understand how they ever got the check mark.
Yep. So they're not doing it anymore. They're looking for a better way to do it.
It's a better way. It was fine. It worked.
I don't know. I don't know why I didn't get a check mark. I have no idea why it's possible.
Why didn't Adam Curry ever get a check mark?
He got one or didn't?
Never got one.
Yeah, I don't know.
And it makes no sense. He's a very, you know, he's a historically famous person. No matter what anyone wants to think.
I mean, isn't the check mark just that you are who you are?
Yeah, that's what it's supposed to be. But then it became kind of an approval check mark.
Yeah.
Well, you are who you are, but we don't necessarily approve of your existence. That's where it kind of deteriorated to, is the way I see it, which explains why Adam Curry never got his check mark.
Yeah.
Because now he says, I won't take one if they get offer it.
I've tried to put a check mark next to my name with an icon. It won't work.
I've seen some people make it work, but it's not the exact same check mark. It's just like a looks a little like.
Yeah,
it.
I've done a blue star that makes it look like it.
Yeah, blue star is good.
That's stupid. Let's talk about more social media. Facebook, New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo this week ordered a state agency to investigate certain reports that state regulated advertisers were using Facebook's advertising platform in a discriminatory manner. There's some reports that said that.
How does that work?
Advertisers were modifying or blocking ads using zip code information to exclude customers based on race, color, national origin, religion, familial status, sex, and disability. among other classifications. So I guess somebody did want to advertise to, it doesn't say age. Does it say age here? I guess you could discriminate by age. Like, hey, my product is not really applicable for someone young. Like, Depends. Maybe you don't want to send an advertisement out to a 20-year-old for Depends.
Depends.
I guess it does. Zip codes, I guess you could say, well, these people won't buy our products because maybe they're in a known affluent or known, like maybe there's a particular hairspray that's appropriate for some races and not others, and maybe they're using zip codes to, I don't know.
What's wrong with that? That's an old practice. It goes back forever.
Seems logical to me. It's called targeted advertising, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, why should somebody, if you have the opportunity, isn't that the whole point of Facebook, to do super targeted advertising? And
yeah, it's supposed to be able to get down to like one person.
Right.
The only one person that would ever buy your product.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's see here. Facebook also, their mail facility this week, this I thought was really fascinating. Their mail facility was evacuated. You see the story? They were evacuated because a routine check found mail possibly containing the nerve agent sarin.
Yeah.
So authorities put the site under quarantine. They conducted this whole testing process. Four buildings were evacuated. Three have been cleared. They're back in and stuff. This package was delivered around 11 a.m. Now, here's my question. What kind of mail room and mail facility does Facebook need? Isn't it a digital company that pretty much everything is going digitally?
Well, that's actually, I didn't think of that question. That is a great, when I said it, that's a great question. Yeah, why do they have a mail room for?
I don't even understand it.
Maybe for checks in the mail.
What kind of, no, but I'm saying a company like Facebook, which is totally digital.
Yeah, it's all digital company. There's no reason for it. You're right. I think that unless there, maybe that was it. The one envelope came in, period. And they thought it was suspicious because who's going to mail to us?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's crazy. Folks in the chat room, some people are hearing this high-pitched noise or something like that. Again, that's a subliminal message to donate to the show, just to let you know. But other than that, I don't know what it is. If somebody could record and send to me, I'd really like to hear it. I don't know where it's coming from. All of our levels look good. All the sample rates are exactly matched. The system is, it could be this computer maybe. Maybe I have to plug it into somewhere else.
It could be the Rodecaster.
Oh, keep on blaming the Rodecaster.
Yeah, well, until they get it fixed.
Yeah, that's right.
I wanted Rodecaster to buy one of those things, but now that you tell me it doesn't work on a PC.
Well, it works on a PC.
Without going through a bunch of bull crap, which I'm not going to do.
Well, here's the issue. It's not that it doesn't work on a PC. If you want true multi-track, like multiple tracks versus just a stereo in, that's where the problems come in. The stereo, if you want to just do a stereo in mix, you're fine. But I want the Rodecaster to do the whole realm of tracks so that you're a little bit light, you're a little bit heavy, we can adjust it, we can do what you have to do.
So, well, wasn't it supposed to do that?
Yeah, it does. But I'm saying if you can also choose.
But in other words, if you want to only use it for the bare bones stereo, will work.
But you still have the outputs. You still have the mix minus that's automatic through USB. You still have the pads. You have all that.
All right. Well,
maybe I'll buy you one for the holidays.
What?
Maybe I'll buy you one for the holidays.
Yeah, maybe you will.
Maybe I will.
Not until they fix it.
Yeah. All right. OPEC. OPEC has agreed to extend production cuts to keep prices high because they're doing it because the economy is slowing down. they want to increase prices because the economies are slowing down. They need to keep prices elevated. Now, I think they're probably talking about their economies, not ours, because if they have higher prices, only OPEC nations really get helped, not necessarily the rest of the world. Although, it helps U.S. because we do such an incredible amount of oil output these days, so it does help certain areas around the country, Texas, Permian Basin, Balkan. But what's interesting, price has been respecting technicals, although it fell off a little bit of a cliff today, but I want to show you this. I don't know what crude is right now. I don't have that machine in front of me. But this is a kind of interesting chart here. It's the daily chart of crude oil, and it goes back to, I don't know, April. But you can notice how it hit that 50-day moving average like five times, one, two, three, four, five, six times.
Crude's at 56.61.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can take a look at this. We're going to have this on the show notes for episode number 463. So there you go. Check that out. Yeah. Then we have the Bitcoin crash and dash and crash. So Bitcoin, take a look at this chart. This is interesting. Bitcoin went recently up to about 14,000, stopped dead.
Both these charts say crude oil chart.
Mine doesn't. Mine says crude oil. And this one's, oh yeah, look at the bottom one. I'll change the name.
It's okay. We'll change the name for the website, yeah. It went up to 13,000 almost.
It almost tapped at 14,000.
Yeah, took only with a few the days. Little spike there. I see that.
That was a great, I talked about this last week. I do a Friday market, pre-market update to a webinar, kind of a track me as I go through all these different charts. And we talked about this last Friday as a great example of a blow-off top. That happened like last Wednesday. You see that move higher and they couldn't do it. And it came back into the basic top half of the position. And that was a real signal. That was a blow off top after that incredible gap higher than move up. And then I think it cracked. Where'd it go down to today? It was I think 9,500, which was my target. See my target there?
Yeah.
Tap that. And now it's, let's see where it is now. Let me, look at my handy dandy app. I got this really good TradingView app. And Bitcoin is now trading at 11,422. 28.
And it's out of control.
It's totally out of control. The other cryptos haven't moved as excessively as this has.
Yeah.
Yeah, spike down to, let's see what price that was. 9,600. It was earlier today, right at 14,000. So it took a 30% round trip in the last couple of days.
Crazy.
Yep. Earnings season is ahead. The week of the 15th, we're going to start seeing the financials like JP Morgan and a few others that will be reporting. And it does look like there's a chance that markets have gotten a little bit ahead of themselves in terms of earnings, if earnings are going to matter. If earnings are going to matter. Because it looks like there's probably going to be some downside guidance that people are not taking into consideration. Everybody thinks that everything is just, you know, fluff and, you know, puppy dogs and, you know, rainbows and just beauty feel things out there. But yet we know that there was last quarter a start, a very, I would say the undertone was a concern about the outlook moving forward. And I would expect that with all the fluffy nature of the markets right now and where we are, we've started to see a couple things like some of the home builders come out with some downside guidance. I would really expect that there's not going to be, you know, I don't expect the companies to come out and be like, yeah, man, we're on fire and it's going to continue this way moving forward. I really do think they're going to be a bit more conservative in their outlook.
That would sound right.
So we'll see what has to happen there. Tesla, on the other hand, came up tonight with their delivery numbers for the recent period. Second quarter deliveries beat nicely. Stock was up about 8% after market. And the company also said, and this is kind of important, that the orders exceeded deliveries during the quarter, resulting in an increased backlog. They didn't give any numbers in terms of margins, in terms of earnings, in terms of expectations, but they did deliver a total of 95,200 electric vehicles during the quarter, which was in line with the guidance of about 90 to 100,000. Expectations were about 77 to 80,000. So they beat that nicely.
Okay, well, the Model 3 seems to be doing well.
Yep. Let's see what else we have here. All right, before we get to the announcement of the new Close to the Pin, I think we have to just make a moment to realize that it is we're halfway through the year. And that means that we've done about 25 or so podcasts, right? That's about right for the year so far, 2019.
26 would be halfway through.
So did about 25, 26 podcasts throughout the year. 26 hours of just pure entertainment, education, just, you know, amongst friends. And all we ask is a couple of shekels. If you want to do it, just go over to the donate. If you don't want to do it, that's okay too. But if you want to feel the love that other people feel when they donate, that's what you do. Go over to the donate button over on dhunplugged.com and click to your heart's content. Big or small, we will personally respond with a thank you. All right, so.
Yes, yes. Please
here,
do it.
Here we go. What do you think about this? I didn't ask you about this. I just did it. But I looked and I didn't see this on a previous list of Close to the Pins. Bank of America.
Oh, that's a good one.
Right in line when earnings is going to start coming out next week or so. So you're going to be in the throes of earnings for the banks. And the banks, don't forget, have had a bit of a headwind with regard to interest rates, concern about European exposure, inverted yield curve. So going to be an interesting time. Refinancing activity kicked up a little bit. So there's kind of a good and a yin and a yang when it comes to the banks right now. So
take this will be a good one to pick. Yes. See who wins this. I think I can hit this one right on the money.
Yeah. So send me over your guess. It's live now. You go over to DH Unplugged and you put in a price guess. So the way the game works really quickly for those of you that don't know and haven't participated is this. We give you a stock. We give you a date that the stock is going to be priced at. We give you a time period to put in your price guess. So right now it's through not this coming Friday, but next Friday. You put in a price guess that you think it will be on the following Friday after that. The closest to the number wins. If there's a tie, whoever got in their number first, the price guess first, wins. You win a t-shirt that says DH Unplugged. It's really cool. And you also get a certificate, very nice certificate that you can mount and frame and show off to all your friends. But you got to go over to DH Unplugged and do it. And you could also then track, once we get all of the price guesses in, you could track who's on top. It regularly will rotate and show you who's closest to and who's leading the pack the whole time from when the price guess period closes until the date that the entire contest ends.
Perfect.
Oh, yep. Okay. Do you want to take this whole thing and discuss this 5G weather data issue problem? Because I think this is kind of important.
Well, I don't know how important it is. I mean, they're going to try to auction off some 40, I think it's 24 gigahertz, to 29 gigahertz of range, high frequency, super high frequency 5G, supposedly. You know, the Chinese 5G doesn't use these frequencies. They use way down to 2-3 gigahertz, which I find interesting since there's supposed to be some big leaders in 5G. Why are we using these frequencies? And it turns out that this particular frequency, even though it might be harmful to your health, which is what a lot of people are concerned about, because we're normally not inundated with this sort of RF. But in this case, it turns out that this frequency interferes with a lot of satellite image. It's not imagery. It's the ability to track the water in the atmosphere.
The water vapors.
Water vapor. And if you ever go to Unisys or some of these satellite GOES satellites and all these other ones, they track water vapor, and you can see the water vapor in the atmosphere, and then when you look at the weather, and this apparently interferes with the ability to do that. Nobody knows what to do about it.
Yeah, apparently
it's very specific. The ability to track water vapor is very specific to this frequency. It's right, according to that report I read that you sent. It's a very specific number that needs to be used that it uses to track this, and it doesn't need a bunch of 5G frequencies interfering with it.
But the problem is what is that? What do I care? What do I care? Well, all right, so your weather forecast may be a little funky. Oh, what do I care about that? Let's go into the whole area of boating, naval, storm prediction. All that stuff that goes into, you know, whether it's going to be a hurricane, meteorology, oceanography, ice observations, sea surface height, wave and surface current forecasts, acoustic models, tropical cyclone analysis. There's a billion things. And then on the naval, there's a degraded safety of flight and safety of navigational forecasts. That's not good. That probably not only deals with boating, but probably airplane transportation as well.
Well, the military has the ability to quash anything that interferes with their business.
Well, they're gonna.
And I just don't understand why they just don't do that.
They've got to. If it's going to degrade battleship awareness for tactical operational advantages, that seems like a buzzword to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think there's a lot of 5G in the middle of the Pacific, but it probably has some effect.
But if there is the 5G out there, it isn't 5G coming off satellites and all that? Isn't it getting somewhere bounced around in the whole thing? It just may get scrambled is the point.
I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do it. 5G is a weird thing because it has that it doesn't go very far. That's so they have to crank it up to get to your house, for example.
I'm still of the opinion that there could be some physical damage to me by this. You know, I told you this. Would you agree that the 4G, 3G, 5G, all this stuff is passing through my body, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Right.
Wi-Fi is too.
And if that's the case, why aren't I getting paid for that? I mean, if you put up a tower on somebody's land, you get paid for it, right?
Yeah.
If you put a thoroughfare through somebody's house, there's going to be probably some kind of payment for that process, right?
Well, that's probably a better analysis with the thoroughfare. Yeah.
A thoroughfare. Get a thoroughfare that the government wants to place on your property.
Right, they drive a road right through the middle of your house.
They use eminent domain, and they say, we're taking it because we want to.
Well, they're doing eminent domain on your body.
And I think that I should be paid for this.
Well, what's it worth?
I think if we all gang up together and tell everybody, you know, these companies, you know, you're using my body, and I'm allowing this to pass through.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of. It's an interesting, futile argument you're making here.
Totally futile.
Yeah.
But it's something that will stay with me and overcome my thought process for a long time.
It's time to put up a website.
Yeah. Stop 5G. No, stop renting my body. I'm being abused by 5G.
Or everything.
I'm being invaded or it's yeah. This is like a Me Too 5G thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you're being raped.
Yeah, I am. I'm being violated by 5G, by little bitty signals. All right, more Boeing issues. Southwest Airlines expect it will have to remove the grounded Boeing 737 MAX from its flying schedule beyond the current October 1st.
Yeah, that figures.
Yeah. Somebody really
screwed up at Boeing.
Well, two things. First of all, they found out that they were using outsourcing $9 an hour engineers.
Yeah, that story may be exaggerated, but it is funny.
Yeah. And secondly, they uncovered a new problem during some simulator sessions that were not related to the old stuff.
Well, now what?
Well, now they opened a can of worms. You know, now all of a sudden there's going to be this whole, well, if we're looking for this stuff, we might as well look for other stuff. Because now the FAA is not going to let it go, right? They're being blamed for not properly... you know, vetting the whole thing, letting it go through the engineers and the systems and processes of Boeing, and basically being Boeing's bitch through the whole process of all these plane deployments.
Yeah, yeah. And when that happens to you as a government worker, Boeing's going to be totally hosed.
Yes. So there you go. All right, we got some fun facts before we get to our stocks. These are all related to the human body. Or the human being. Some crazy things out there. So let's go either or. Odd and even. I'll take the odds. The first fun fact we have today, the longest bout of hiccups lasted nearly 69 years. Now, I don't know about you, by the way. If I have hiccups that last more than a half hour, I'm ready to throw myself out a window.
Well, you can. There's a meditative technique you can use to... To make them go away. I taught the family. Most of the kids can do it. It's just a little bit of concentration, but it's not impossible.
Well, 69 years.
I can't get back to this thing after I went to this click here link. You had a guy licking his elbow. Here we go. I mean, but now it just keeps wanting to blank out on me. Hold on a second. Can I get back to it? Keep reading.
Okay. We'll get to that one in a second. Well, it's physically impossible for most people to lick their elbow.
Well, supposedly it's impossible for anybody to, and you have a video of somebody doing it.
Yep. There's always somebody that could do it. A sneeze travels out of your mouth at over 100 miles per hour.
Jeez, if it kills somebody.
Just the thought of that is so repulsive. Ugh. There are more living organisms on the skin of a single human being than there are human beings on the surface of the earth.
Take a bath. Take a shower.
Like fingerprints, everyone's tongue print is different. And I would wager...
That wouldn't surprise me.
Fun fact number six. I would wager right now that everyone who's listening to this right now just tried to lick their elbow.
Yeah. Well, not me.
No. It's a dirty, filthy thing. There's a link over there also on this guy on YouTube licking his elbow.
I did that. He's got something's wrong with him.
He's a bit of a contortionist.
Yeah.
So, all right, hang on here. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk, as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we'll disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as any additional important disclosures. So, we got a pretty, I would say, a pretty astounding list that, for the most part, is completely due to your incredible picks.
Yeah, I got all the greenies.
You got some bright greens. See how the colors change? We got that contingent color going on there.
Yeah, you got the bright greens.
But those are like, wow. Wow.
Yeah, that's some good ones. Especially I like the Veru ink. It's up 41%.
I looked at that, by the way, to see if it stopped out. Like at any given time here, but no,
it's just very, very solid. That was with this, the way I'm seeing it, when you have a really pretty triangle descending pick that is already, that's already smashed down to the minimum and is starting to break out, it's probably going to just keep inching up.
It may.
That may actually be a doubler before it gets kicked off this thing. Mm. It only has 80, it's got 90 cents to go before it's doubled.
Yeah, exactly. It hit 245 today, back down a little bit, so that was doing pretty well. We got Church & Dwight up 15%, Kinder Morgan up 9.5%, Aerojet Rocketdyne up 38%. All of these, by the way, as I mentioned, you can see on the website, DH Unplugged, under the weekly stock picks. Calavo Growers up 5%, that's holding on. MGM Resorts holding on. Uber down slightly, Ford down slightly. Those are my picks. Calavo also. Syros Therapeutics got bumped up 2.82% after it hit a stop on the 15% line.
I should have given it a 20.
20, you'd be good. You'd be up 9. I checked that, by the way, today. You'd been up 9.5% right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, those that are under five bucks, you got to give some room.
I don't know what I was thinking. I should have made it 20. Mm.
But this descending triangle thing... Well, this triangle descending, or this descending thing is kind of interesting.
Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I got another descending triangle that I'm liking.
What do you got?
Because this Ceres Therapeutics was, I said, I'm not going to have more than one biotech pick.
Yeah.
Because, and then there's another opportunity here because there's the famous, or Genosis Biosciences has got a good insider guy buying away it, and it's a pretty cheap stock. But I decided I'm going to look at these descending triangles again. And there's an old company called BioMarin, Pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that BIOM or is that
BMRN?
Yeah, BRN,
And that's looks interesting. But then there's also one, although I don't like the way the chart looks here near the end, which is Apollo Endosurgery, which is APEN, and it's like a descending triangle that may just collapse. So I'm not I'm not liking that one.
I like that one. Okay,
so I think I'm going to put BMRN on there and see what happens.
Ascending Triangle, Biomarin, we got that. And this is, let's see here. I'm just going to put this on the list. So I have one. I have a weenie trade.
It's Oh, yeah. That one of your tricky trades.
Yeah, this is, you know what? It's probably not, listen, it's not going to be like a banger. It's not like a, oh my God, look at, the, you know, that's not the kind of trade it is. It's a trade with some thought process behind it. And what I mean by that is not that our other stuff isn't, but here's the deal. The deal is that rates have come down. I think the 2-year bond clipped 2% again today as Australia dropped their central bank rate down to the lowest in history overnight.
Wow.
And don't forget, you look around the world, all these negative yields and all these flat numbers out there, you got to ask yourself, well, if I want yield, where am I going? Well, you may or may not like the U.S. for a lot of reasons. You may say, well, look at the debt load that we're carrying. Look at the deficit that we're building. Look at the lack of tax receipts. And, you know, 20 years from now, we're going to be a mess. We're going to be a mess. And if we're a mess, everybody else is a lot more of a mess. And on top of that, our rates are still 2.5%, let's say, on, you know, a little bit longer than a 10-year. You get 2.5-3%. Where
it's better than minus.
Right. It's better than either minus or it's better than, let's say, a 1% yield. So there's a lot of money coming over here. Maybe long-term, not the right move. But this gigantic move that we saw recently, and on top of that, the fact that we're going into a jobs number on Friday, that if it has any strength, I would expect that bonds would reverse a little bit to the upside. In other words, yields would reverse to the upside. So yeah, I think right now
bonds will go down.
Yeah.
So you're taking a shot at ultra short, which means it's a 3X or something.
It's this one happens to be a 2X.
A 2X short on the bonds, thinking that they're going to go down because the yields are going to go up.
Right.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure this is a double. I'm pretty sure it's a double. It's a 2-time. It's 2 times reverse the TLT, which is the long-term bond. So this plays the long-term bond on the short side. Again,
the short side. So you're looking for a bond crash.
Yeah, that's exactly what you play for a bond crash, or looking for, you know, an opportunity to get into bonds when there is maybe the rates have gone too far and extreme to the downside. I mean, it does look like, and I had somebody text me today, it's like, is there a meteor coming that the bond market is sniffing out or something? What is it that is driving these bonds so dramatically? And again, the only thing I could tell you is it seems to me that it's just there's nowhere else to go. This is nowhere.
But wouldn't the money flowing in hard do just the opposite of what you're hoping for?
It would, except for the fact that, again, the Fed is another major component of this, and the Fed is pushing the idea that the Fed is going to act in July, 100% chance of a rate cut in July. I still don't think that happens on the long end of the curve. They can act and pull down the short end, and the long end can still go up. So if our economy is healthy, you would see that, you know, the bonds would start moving up. In other
aren't
words,
they pretty high now. I mean, if our economy is healthy, the 2% yield on a bond doesn't seem like insipid.
No, it's very low. It's ridiculously low. Bond yields historically have been the 4-5% range at that level. And we're sitting at 2.
Yeah, but that was a healthy economy when it was 4-5%, wasn't it normally?
Normal pre, this is pre financial crisis.
Pre-quantitative easing.
Right. All I'm saying is that bonds have been spiking pretty well in terms of price because there's been a lot of buyers in it. And yield has been coming down significantly with the idea the Fed's going to cut rates. I think we've gone beyond the idea, and we've built in too much to this. So we're putting that in there. So that's the explanation for ADB. The question is, why would rates go up if the Fed cut rates? Doesn't that indicate the economy is not that healthy? Yes, but already all that has been baked in. We've had essentially a 1 to 1.25% rate cut already that was just done by the bond market with the Fed pivot in January. So this is all baked in already.
I mean, this is the kind of screwball logic that you can, if you're in the business to do what you're in, it happens.
Yep. Sometimes things move a little bit too far. That's all I'm saying. All right, yeah. We're going to end it there. We're going to end it right at the 1 hour clip so that you can go to bed or do whatever you do. And I'll see you next week.
All right. See you then. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.